Blog Talk Radio.
America is essentially a dream. It is a dream of a land where men of all races, of all nationalities, and of all creeds can live together as brothers. The substance of the dream is expressed in these profound words. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain inalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. One of the first things we notice in this dream is its amazing universalism. It does not say some men, but it says all men. It doesn't say some. It doesn't say all white men, but it says all men, which includes black men. It doesn't say all Gentiles, but it says all men, which includes Jews. It doesn't say all Protestants, but it says all men, which includes Catholics. That is something else that we notice in this dream, which is one of the things that distinguishes democracy and our form of government with other totalitarian systems. It says that there are certain basic rights that are neither conferred by nor derived from the state. In order to discover where they came from, it is necessary to move back behind the dim mist of eternity. They are God-given. Very seldom. Very seldom, if ever, in the history of the world has a socio-political document expressed in such profound, eloquent, and unequivocal language the dignity and the worth of human personality. For the American dream reminds us that every man is the heir of a legacy of dignity. And yet, ever since the founding fathers of our nation dreamed this dream, America has been, to use a big word that the psychologists and the psychiatrists use, a schizophrenic personality, tragically defined. On the one hand, she has proudly professed the noble principles of democracy, and on the other hand, she has proudly practiced, or she has sadly practiced, the very opposite of those principles. Indeed, slavery and segregation have always been strange paradoxes in a nation founded on the principle that all men are created equal. So often, America has trampled over the dream. So often, America has scarred this noble dream. We look and see certain states saying they will never comply with the law of the land. In doing this, America is scarring the dream. We notice people who merely want to be free being brutalized, homes being bombed, churches being bombed. This is a way of scarring the American dream. We notice people who merely want to exercise their citizenship rights, being thrown into jail. This is a way of scarring the dream. And we can hear the voice of a little Emmett Till crying from the rushing waters of Mississippi. This is a way of scarring the dream. And so the Negro is still trampled over by the iron feet of oppression. And so often he has been pushed out of the glittering sunlight of last July and left standing in the piercing chill of an alpine November. This is scarring the American dream. May I say to you, as has been said so eloquently all the afternoon, this dream is being scarred not only in Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana, and all of the southern states, but it is being scarred in New York, in Illinois, in Pennsylvania, and I imagine even in California. The fact is that the Negro all over America is still the last tide and the first fire, and he still can't live where he wants to live and where his money can get him to live. But today, more than ever before, America is challenged to bring this noble dream into reality. The shape of the world today does not afford us the luxury of an anemic democracy. And the price that the United States must pay for the continued exploitation of the Negro and other minority groups is the price of its own destruction. People are looking over to the United States today and they're wondering what we are doing about this problem. They're looking over from Asia and Africa. For years, most of these people have been dominated politically, exploited economically, segregated, and humiliated by some foreign power. But today, they are gaining their independence. More than 1,600,000,000 of the former 1,800,000,000 colonial subjects have their independence today, and they are saying in no uncertain terms that racism and colonialism must go. The hour is late. The clock of destiny is ticking out. And we must act now before it is too late. It is trite but urgently true that if America is to remain a first-class nation, she can no longer have second-class citizens. Yes. Now, I must hasten to say that we must not solve this problem merely to meet the communist challenge. We must not seek to solve this problem merely to appeal to Asian and African peoples. This problem must be solved in the United States because segregation and discrimination are morally wrong.
This is a product of Beverly Nation. This is our 8th annual celebration of the life of the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King. On air now from Lagos, Nigeria, dial in at area code 516-453-9133. Press the number 1 to join the conversation, and this is all brought to you by Looking Glass Entertainment. Good evening. We are so pleased with our ONE syndicated station family host to honor a man such as this. Our first participant tonight is the host at Damon Network of the Comedy Commentary, Mr. Ralph Ippolito. Mr. Ippolito, what does Dr. King mean to you?
How you doing, Charisse? Well, what Dr. King means to me, he was a great, great man. This man had a vision. He was a man of vision. He was a man of guts. And he believed that everybody was created equal. He did not look at color. And what he means to me is somebody who sticks up for everybody's rights, that we are all united as one race, the human race. And if he was alive today, he would not like what would be going on, not in the very least. He's a man that stood for, I wouldn't say a Democratic Party or a Republican Party. He just wanted everybody to be united and for everybody to love one another. And really, that is the best definition of Martin Luther King, I think, is the word is love, because he just wanted everybody to be loved and to love one another, and for everybody to get along. And that's what Dr. King meant to me.
Okay, thank you so much. Our next participant is the host of Strictly Business at Damon Network. Ms. E. Davis is her name. Ms. E. Davis, what does Dr. King mean to you?
Well, Dr. King was definitely, I would say, the boycott, the epitome of the boycott. When I was a kid, I think I had to be about 6 years old. I was in kindergarten, and I woke up ready for school, and my mom said, "You're not going to school today," and I didn't understand why. And she said, "We're celebrating Dr. Martin Luther King," and I didn't know who that was or what that was about, and she explained it to me in a childlike form. She says that there was a time where white people didn't like black people, and he fought for our cause. And today we're celebrating his birthday. So we're going to stay home and celebrate his birthday. And my school didn't honor, at the time, my school didn't honor Dr. King's Day. But my mother made it clear that we are going to honor Dr. King's birthday. He was the epitome of the boycott. I'm a big believer in boycotting and what's not right. If something is not right, if something is said out of place without the apology, then that business does not get my money. It doesn't get my time. Okay, a few years ago when H&M had a young boy wearing a sweatshirt saying the coolest monkey in the jungle, I haven't been to H&M since. And I live behind a mall where there's an H&M. I walk right past it. And even though they since apologized, they still don't get my business, because it is too far in advance in society where they should have known better. So Dr. King is the epitome of that boycott, because when they led that Montgomery bus boycott, money plummeted. And they were forced to stop that nonsense about blacks in the back and the whites in the front. So that's what he represents to me.
Thank you so much. Our next participant is our 2020 Linear New Host of the Year and host of Know Your Rights at Beverly Nation Online Radio. Mr. Tara Strength, what does Dr. King mean to you?
Hello, can you hear me, Sharice?
Yes, I can hear you.
Great. All right, so when I think about Dr. King, I think about a highly advanced soul. I agree with Ippolito that he came here to unite us. And I think about the sacrifices he made and the fact that when I think about him, the big thing he tried to get us all to do was to see our humanity, and to get along and to respect and love and care for each other. And that's what he fought for. You know, he fought for that. And this man he's being celebrated because all of us recognize what he stood for and his contributions to humanity. But in terms of him being an African American, he was trying to get those who he felt were oppressing us to see their humanity. And I see him as a highly evolved soul that came here to help inspire us to all be more evolved. And that's basically what he means to me. And God, and my, oh my, how we need him right now. Because I could just imagine the speeches about what's going on right now. So this show is timely. His birthday right now is timely because of what's going on right now. I mean, man, we need him right now, honestly. And that's what he means to me.
Okay. Thank you so much. Our next participant is the host of Awakening the Goddess, Miss Lena Blue. Miss Lena Blue, what does Dr. King mean to you?
I thank you for the opportunity to share my thoughts. When I learned of Dr. Martin Luther King as a young child, I was never the same. I just wasn't the same. I instantly became an advocate in my heart, even though I was a child. I wanted to fight, and I wanted to fight for injustices. I earnestly read everything I could get my hands on. I learned about his marches, and I wanted to know, why did people follow him? And then I ran across an old Reader's Digest that belonged to my grandmother, and it contained an article about Dr. Martin Luther King and how the pictures of people marching, the riot control police, and also a picture standing on the balcony of the infamous Lorraine Hotel. And I was intrigued by all this, and I was struck. And I remember this memory very vividly, and that was many, many years ago. And I later went on to read about his speeches and his life and his legacy. And I remember, and what stuck out to me was his speeches exuded so much power and so much love. And it was just so much, he was so charismatic that he just drew people to him with the message that he was giving. And as an adult, Dr. King's legacy to me means the journey to freedom, to me in every way possible, with the inspiration of hope, love, and unity. And my takeaway is to continue to progress and move forward. And I wanted to just say this one little quote from him. He said, "If you can't fly, then run. If you can't run, then walk. If you can't walk, then crawl. But whatever you do, you have to keep moving forward." Thank you.
Thank you so much. Now we are going to listen to our second excerpt of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
The lower levels of deprivation in the black ghettos of the North, they did very little to improve the economic lot of the masses of Negroes in our country. Not only that, we must come to see that in these movements, we got responses and support because it really didn't cost the nation anything to deal with them. It didn't cost the nation anything to integrate lunch counters. It didn't cost the nation one penny to guarantee the right to vote. And a lot of people really supported us in Alabama and Mississippi and all across the South, because they were really against something, not because they were for genuine equality for the black man. They looked at Bull Connor and saw how he was beating us and how brutal he was, and they were really outraged. They looked at Jim Clark and Selma, and they were outraged about it. And so they took a stand for decency. But it was never really a stand for genuine equality for the black man. T.S. Eliot said on one occasion that there is no greater heresy than to do the right thing for the wrong reason. A lot of people were doing the right thing, but they were doing it for the wrong reason. And now when we demand that people do the right thing for the right reason, they began making excuses and giving all kinds of rationalizations. Now the time has come for genuine equality to come into being for all of God's children. It isn't going to be as easy now to deal with the problem as before because, as I said, it will cost the nation something. It's much easier to integrate lunch counters than it is to eradicate slums. It's much easier to guarantee the right to vote than it is to guarantee an annual minimum income and create jobs. And yet these are the very things that must be done. It's the problem facing all of our urban areas, the crisis facing our nation, to be solved. Now, the other thing is that our struggles over the last decade did very little to grapple with the economic problem. that the Negro faces. And let me hasten to say that I say the Negro here, but I'm speaking of all of the poor. I'm not only concerned about the black poor, I'm concerned about poverty among my Mexican-American brothers. I'm concerned about poverty. I'm concerned about poverty among my Puerto Rican brothers. I'm concerned about poverty among my Indian brothers. I'm concerned about poverty among my Appalachian white brothers, and I wish they would realize that we are struggling against poverty for everybody and would join in the movement to get rid of poverty. Now, what I think is needed at this time is a powerful movement that will once more dramatize a great evil in our nation, the evil of poverty, and will call attention to that evil that will be massive enough and militant enough to call attention to it without destroying life or property in the process. The ultimate weakness of a riot is that it can ultimately and very soon be halted by a superior force. But we are going to Washington in a movement, a poor people's campaign, and this is the kind of stay-in. It's not going to be a one-day march on Washington. It's going to be a stay-in. And and we're going to stay in Washington. We're going to have our lobby-ins, and we're going to stay there until we get a response from Congress. And if we haven't had a response, by the time Congress adjourns, we will get back. We'll just move on out to Chicago, but we'll get back. Very seriously, we need your support. I wish I had time to give you some idea of the tactics. I wish I had some idea to give you some time to give you an idea of the timetable, but time will not permit me to do that today because of another meeting in Los Angeles. But let me say that we do need your support as we set out to dramatize this problem. Now, we are recruiting a minimum of 3,000 poor people that are going in the beginning. And then later, we want all people of goodwill to come in a supportive role. Around June the 15th, we will have that 1 or 2 day march, and that's when we want everybody to come into Washington and express support for those who are there struggling against poverty. And we will simply be saying, de-escalate and end the war in Vietnam in order to escalate the war against racism and injustice. I want to say a few words about that war because it has played havoc with our domestic destinies. It has made the great society a myth and replaced it with a troubled and confused society. The war in Vietnam has strengthened domestic reaction. It has given the extreme right, the anti-labor, anti-Negro, anti-minority, and anti-humanist forces, a weapon of spurious patriotism to galvanize its supporters into reaching for power right up to the White House. It hopes to use national frustration to take control and restore the America of social insecurity and power for the privileged. The other thing is that the war in Vietnam has produced a shameful order of priorities in which the decay, squalor, and pollution of the cities are neglected. And even though 70% of our population now live in them,
We are not getting the attention for these problems which we must have. The war has created the bizarre spectacle of armed forces of the United States fighting in ghetto streets of America while they are fighting in jungles in Asia. The war has so increased Negro frustration and despair that urban outbreaks are now an ugly feature of the American scene. How can the administration, with quivering anger, denounce the violence of ghetto Negroes when it has given an example of violence in Asia that shocks the world?
Now for our next participant, in which whom is our 2020 International Internet Radio Hall of Fame Broadcasting Enshrinee and 2020 Anna Waddell Award winner, Mr. Huni Bakatun. Mr. Huni Bakatun, what does Martin Luther King mean to you?
Hey, peace and abundant divine blessings. Thank you so much, Sister Charisse. When I think of Dr. Martin Luther King, I think the last of a dying breed. When I think about all of the struggle and all of the intention that he had, his intentions was in the right place. But I also want to say tonight is that Dr. Martin Luther King, the later day Dr. Martin Luther King, who realized that he had such hope and faith in such a soulless people, a people that refused to see anything wrong. During the time before his era, they were still killing black men, women, and children. During the time of his era, and even 50 years plus after his death, you're still dealing with a people that refused to see anything wrong. So even though I love all the things that Dr. Martin Luther King stood for, I also know, how do you think that he would feel if he was alive today, knowing that more black men, women, and children have got killed, and not even an ounce of justice after all of this time? Today we celebrate a man that stood for peace, and fortunately, throughout so many people banded together and creating a holiday in his honor. But the best way that you can show me my honor and respect, speaking on behalf of one of the greatest, Dr. Martin Luther King, then for once you will stop making excuses at all of the injustice that continues to happen. For once you will stop making excuses and stop giving these evildoers a pat on the wrist, and keep allowing them to keep getting away with all of their murder that they refuse to stop. And I'm not talking about all Caucasian people, because I know that there's a lot of other people that's also at fault at the evil that persists on happening in this day and time. It's a great thing to see people get along, but to what expense? So my message, especially to my people, stop allowing yourself to be killed and calling it godly. If you were to do anything in my honor, then you would stand up and arm yourself and do whatever you take, whatever it needs to be done, to protect yourself and your people. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Our next participant is our 2019 International Internet Radio Hall of Fame Broadcasting Enshrinee and 2019 Anna Waddell Award winner, Ms. Jerry Petito. Ms. Jerry Petito, what does Dr. Martin Luther King mean to you?
Oh, hi, how are you, sweetheart? You know, he means so much to me. Last year, I had the honor of co-hosting his show on O&E, and I wrote a poem, a very lengthy poem. So what I did now is I just took out the most important pieces for me, what he means to me, and I'm going to read that to you right now, okay?
Yes.
Today we celebrate in memory of a beautiful man who portrayed love. This man I speak of, the world does know, Martin Luther King Jr., not a stone would throw. January 15, 1929, Michael King Jr. was born, but in 1934, his new name would be worn. His father, a Baptist pastor in Germany, heard this man, Martin Luther, was speaking, is where this change began. So inspired by Martin Luther, a Protestant reform leader, his dad knew right then Michael would be a succeeder. In honor of that speaker, Michael's name was now changed. Martin Luther's now his name. His fate was prearranged. I'm sure that God inspired the choice his dad had made. Martin Luther King Jr. began his life crusade. Martin became the leader, Afro-American Civil Rights Crusade. He led nonviolent protests, freedom, peace, and equality to be made. King was a Baptist minister, but the most important voice of all, the American Civil Rights Movement, without him, would have dropped the ball. 1955, he was awarded his doctorate. Boston University was the school. Philosophy and systematic theology, Martin Luther King, you rule. Martin Luther King's my hero on levels I can't comprehend. He worked for equal rights. God created all he'd defend. King is famous for many quotes, but the one the world won't forget, I have a dream, belonged to him through his tears, his blood, and sweat. At the age of 35, the youngest one back then to be given the Nobel Prize was amazing to all men. As King walked out on that balcony to Ben, he said these words, "Make sure you play. Take my hand, precious Lord," were his final words that day. Ben was his friend and musician to play at his speaking affair. Imagine God hearing those words. In God's hands, he's placed with care. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., in memory of you today, all of us say thank you for leading and showing the way. And, you know, on a sadder note for me, that poor man is rolling over in his grave seeing what's happening today. That's all I wanted to say about that. But he was a hero, a legend, and the most incredible man. One of the most incredible men that walked this earth.
Thank you so much. Our final participant is our ONE syndicated station commissioner and host of Walking in Purpose, Angela Thomas Smith. Miss Angela Thomas Smith, what does Dr. King mean to you?
Oh my God. How are you tonight?
I'm well.
He means a lot to me. Especially growing up in the South. I grew up here in South Carolina, and he just meant a lot to the children here. He was a man that believed in mankind, a man that stood for morals for everyone. He truly believed that everyone should be treated equally. I was looking over some of his quotes, and I'm reminded, Brother Hooney, I feel you. I truly do. And he did too, because Martin Luther King said, "I came to the conclusion that there is essentially moments in your life when you must decide to speak for yourself. Nobody else can speak for you. So there comes a time when we can march, we can do everything, but when will you stand for yourself and speak for yourself?" He said it. He spoke it. Even back then, it's still true to this day. So when will you take a stand for yourself? Thank you.
Thank you so very much. Okay. The late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. was born as Michael King Jr. on January 15, 1929 in Atlanta, Georgia. As a child, he had a very strong sense of humor and enjoyed being silly, especially after school. He took his education very serious to the point that he skipped the 9th and 12th grade. At the age of 15, which was in 1944, he graduated from high school and enrolled in Morehouse College without a formal graduation. In 1948, he graduated with a bachelor's degree in sociology, and immediately that fall, he enrolled in Crozier Theological Seminary in Chester, Pennsylvania. While he attended Crozier, he also took courses at the University of Penn, located in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He later graduated from Crozier Theological Seminary in 1951. From that point, he traveled to Boston, Massachusetts to attend Boston University, where he later met his wife, Coretta, the following year. They both attended school in Boston, Massachusetts. A short year later, on June 18, 1953, Martin Luther King Jr. married Coretta Scott in her hometown of Alabama. During the year of 1955, King graduated from Boston University with a doctorate in systematic theology. Later on that year, on November 17, Miss Coretta gave birth to their first child, Yolanda King, whom later also became an African-American activist, but she died on May 15, 2007. The second child that they had in their family was Martin Luther King Jr. III, and he was born on October the 23rd, 1957. Later came Dexter Scott King on January 30th, 1961, and then Bernice King on March 28th, 1963. From the 1950s and 1960s, he was a Baptist minister and social rights activist in the U.S., and later on starting the American Civil Rights Movement, in which he only organized protests that were peaceful as head of the Southern Christian Leadership Conference. On August the 28th, 1963, is when Dr. King gave his one of his most powerful speeches, that's well known to everyone in the U.S. and beyond. The title of this message was "I Have a Dream." This speech took place on the steps of the Lincoln Memorial Gathering, which accrued about 250,000 people. This speech promoted jobs and freedom for all people. Later on, in 1964, Dr. King was awarded the Nobel Peace Prize for his nonviolent struggle for civil rights for African Americans. 4 years later, on April 4, 1968, in Memphis, Tennessee, at the Lorraine Motel, King was fatally shot on that day at 6:01 p.m. It is now time for us to come together as a people in order to manifest Dr. Martin Luther King's dream. He told us that he had a dream, and now it's time to come together to bring that dream into fruition. We are now going to listen to the final excerpt of the evening by the late Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.
We read about it in The Beauties of Literature. In a sense, Edgar Allan Poe was talking about Eros when he talked about his beautiful Annabel Lee with a love surrounded by the halo of eternity. In a sense, Shakespeare was talking about Eros when he said, "Love is not love, which alters whence alteration finds, or bends with the remover to remove. It is an ever-fixed mark that looks on tempest and is never shaken. It is a star to every wandering bark." You know, I can remember that because I used to quote it to my wife when we were quoting. That's Eros. That's Eros. Then the Greek language talks about phileo, which is another level of love. It is an intimate affection between personal friends. On this level, we love because we are love. We love people that we like. This is friendship. Then the Greek language has another word called agape. Agape is more than romantic love. Agape is more than friendship. Agape is not something affectionate. Agape is understanding, creative, redemptive goodwill for all men. It is an overflowing love which seeks nothing in return. Theologians would say that it is the love of God operating in the human heart. And when one rises to love on this level, he loves men not because he likes them, but he loves every man because God loves him. He goes on with that. And so he rises to the level of hating the system rather than the individual who is caught up in that system. He loves the person and hates the evil deed. And I think this is what Jesus meant when he said, love your enemies. And I'm happy that he didn't say like your enemies, because it's pretty difficult to like some people. It's difficult to like people bombing your home and threatening your children and kicking you about. But Jesus says, love them, and love is greater than like. Love is understanding, creative, redemptive goodwill for all men. And somehow, more and more, I've come to believe this.
Yes.
This is the way that we will get out of this dark night of oppression and make of this nation a better nation. It means that we can stand up and allow the opposition to know that we will not accept injustice.
Yes.
We will stand up against it with our lives,
yes,
but we will never stoop down to the level of violence and hatred. And we will come to that point when we will be able to convince him that a new world is emerging. And I tell you this evening that it will give us the right attitude.
Yes.
I know sometimes how discontent we get, and we have a right to get discontent, and how frustrated we get in the process sometimes. But I submit to you this evening that this way of nonviolence will help us not to seek to rise from a position of disadvantage to one of advantage, thus subverting justice. We will not substitute one tyranny for another. For black supremacy is as dangerous as white supremacy. I am convinced this afternoon that God is not interested merely in the freedom of black men and brown men and yellow men. God is interested in the freedom of the whole human race and the creation of a society. I believe with this method and this approach, we will be able to win. And finally, as we struggle, we do not struggle alone. It's dark sometimes. It's difficult, and particularly for those who are struggling in the Deep South, facing all of the violence and all of the suffering. But that is something that consoles us along the way. We are convinced that our cause is right. I return to Alabama, Mississippi, and Georgia, not in despair, not in bitterness. I return knowing that we are moving into a bright day of freedom.
Yes. And
we, through our struggles, through our suffering, through our sacrifice, will be able to achieve the American dream. And this will be the day when all of God's children, black men and white men, Jews and Gentiles, Protestants and Catholics, will be able to join hands and sing in the words of the old Negro spiritual, free at last, free at last, thank God Almighty, we are free at last.
And now, our Chief Executive Officer of Ngozi Time, Multimedia LLC, Oladel Ngozi, for this time.
Well, thank you so much, Sharice Lee. First of all, I want to thank all the folks who are participating. We're going to get some calls in before I go into my final thoughts tonight and this wonderful tribute to the legacy of the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Caller number one, you're on live right now with me and Sharice Lee at this time in our tribute to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Caller, you're on. All right, caller. All right. Maybe they called in. I don't want to come on at this time. That's fine. We'll go to the next caller. Caller number two, you're online right now with me and Sharice Lee, or Sharice Lee and I, and our tribute to Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. tonight.
First of all, you know what? What's up, Sharice Lee? What's up, brother?
How you doing?
Oh, DJ Olasky. Y'all hit it right on the nose tonight because I don't know if Black Lives gonna matter after tomorrow, but it matters today. Oh my God, this is perfect. And the best thing in my life, Sharice, my dad was born on the same day as Martin Luther King, January 15th. So I'm a problem. You know what I'm saying? I'm supposed to be totally deleted, but you know, can't be defeated yet. But oh my God, I'm loving what y'all doing because if there's a new Black Panther movement coming out, what would it look like for 2021? Because I have no clue what's going to happen after, you know, the situation is coming in our news at hand. But thank God for today, because I don't know how many people died today. Pray for them. But it's not as many that's going to die in our future if we don't get ourselves together. Hallelujah.
All right. You heard that, brother. Will of God right there tonight. And, you know, Sharice, you know, I love Will because he's just himself. Anytime he gets on the radio, he's going to tell his truth. And now caller number three, you're on the line right now, of course, with, you know, Sharice Lee and I and our tribute to Dr. Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. Okay, unmute yourself. All right. I don't know what's going on with that line right now, but we want to thank you for trying to call in. What more can I say tonight that hasn't already been said? You know, we've been doing this for 8 years. 8 years. And, you know, Ricky Jones and I hosted this show together. And it's amazing how, you know, tonight, what Sharice has done for us tonight, being our eighth host, you know, what Jared Petito did for us last year, and the list goes on, Andrea Presley, Lovely Ellis, Louis A. Stavon. The legacy is being able to tell your truth and how you feel about Dr. King. As a little boy, hearing the inspirational messages of Dr. King, one would be strengthened. Sometimes you might not always agree with his methods or whatever, but you knew this is truly a man of the Most High, a person that really struggled and survived because of the love of his people. That's what it's all about. Do you love the people that support you? At Only Dynasty, we really do. Without our listeners, we are nothing. We have outstanding hosts that provide with everything that goes in. And so we want to be able to have a night of honor and respect of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Now, we have a lot of hosts that might differ from his methods. That's what broadcasting is all about. That's what their platform is all about. There is no censorship here. I want to thank a lot of the chats out there tonight, but this is a night that we will respect and honor the legacy of the late Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Tomorrow night on these O&E stations, we come right back on with a man that needs no introduction, the true rock star O&E, Mr. Terrence Strength, and Know Your Rights, 9:30 Eastern Standard Time on these O&E stations, of course. 7 days advertising to O&E, which is all of W and goes to Enterprise Research, of course, at www.lookingglassentertainment.wordpress.com, as well as the Gozy Prime Time on at devnet.com. We're in Gozy Time both for Twitter and Instagram. Ola Deli and Gozy at Fediverse and Google Plus. Ola Deli and Malay with Gozy at Facebook, as well as the historic Devin Nation Online Radio, established 2013. Any comments, suggestions, or wonderful program tonight? olaydaylay.ingozywithmy@gmail.com. And I am your mother and father's favorite producer, Ola Deli and Malay with Gozy, saying good night and good luck to all the folks out there in Armed Force Radio that support us on a constant basis tonight. We want to thank all the folk that tune in to our outstanding presentation. I want to thank all the hosts that took the time to always represent O&E so fabulously. I want to thank every single host that called into the show tonight. And now, with the last words of the evening, is our narrator, Sharice Lee.
Well, I just would like to take the time to thank everyone for calling in, and I'd like to thank the host for, you know, supporting this show. And it is important that we never forget about Dr. Martin Luther King's dream, because his dream was very, very, very powerful. But it comes a time where we have to, like, we know about his dream. He was telling us his dream so that we could ignite or manifest the dream into a reality. So that should be our goal as a people for the year 2021, us, you know, becoming, just treating our neighbors like like family, loving each other more and supporting each other more. And also starting our own businesses, corporations, getting lines of credit, opening up our own banks, and, you know, taking our stuff back. So, you know, that's all that I have to say. And thanks again for calling in.